Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So
like
you could just see
$600,000 deducted. So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. "Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here." "Oh, man." He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every tax check I had written, and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government. Plus, I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this, because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back. Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know. He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt. I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way. Your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
I recently renovated this 100-square-foot building into a cozy tiny home. And in this video, I'll show you around and break down the cost along the way. So let's get started. You enter the property from the side.
As the sun rises over the Arabian Sea on the coastal city of Mumbai, the day is beginning for the 10 million people who live in the crowded city slums. The Hegre family lives in the Kalava slum, in this tiny 10 by 10 foot concrete room. The 60 neighbors who live on their small lane all share just 4 toilets and this small room for bathing. The Hegre's 3 daughters, 6-year-old twins Anisha and Tanisha, and 12-year-old big sister Anchal, are up early getting ready for school. Their mother, Parvati, helps get the girls and her husband, Rajesh, out the door. After their dad drops the girls off at school, he heads to his job at a security company where he earns about $200 a month. Then Parvati cleans their house, makes lunch and dinner, and performs her daily prayers. Then the most important task of all, she collects the next day's supply of water. In this slum, water only flows during a 2-hour window, just once a day.
I felt that you can't come to India without experiencing what we've all heard about the poverty. But I also wanted to frame that story in such a way that it represented the truth of the people.
Anchal,
yeah.
I think this is so wonderful that you're giving me the tour guide. You speak English so well.
So it wasn't just people living in slums, eating out of the trash piles and not having a place to defecate and all the stuff that comes with being extremely, extremely poor. But for me, every story is about the heart of the people. And so what is the heart of the people? How do you find a story that shows somebody who is living a life of sparseness, of poverty, but also still has the heart?
Thank you. Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste. Great. All right, we're going here?
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Namaste.
Namaste.
Showers of blessings. Oh, thank you.
Namaste.
Thank you, family. Thank you. I have to tell you, when I stepped in the door, I was thinking, okay, where is the house? Okay, where's the rest of the house? And then I realized I was already in it.
All right, everybody quiet, please.
Okay, I wanted to start off by just saying thank you for allowing me into your home. How long have you lived in this home?
Living for 33 years.
33 years?
Yeah.
You don't look 33 years old, but you've lived here your whole life?
Yeah.
So your family was here before?
Yeah, my family is also here.
In this space?
This space.
And this is the entire space. The entire family lives and sleeps in this space.
Mm.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of you sleep in this room.
In this room.
You eat in this room.
Mm.
You play in this room.
Mm.
You share family time together in this room, which is from here to here. The five of you.
Yeah.
Okay. This may be an obvious question, and I don't mean to be offensive, but does it ever feel crowded? Does it feel crowded?
No.
It doesn't feel crowded.
No, we just manage it. We have a habit of sleeping because we don't feel anything.
You don't feel anything?
Yeah.
And how do you do it? I mean, how do you physically do it?
I sleep in that corner.
Where I am right now?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And she sleeps over here, my mother over here, my another sister over here, and my father over here.
Okay. All right. Would you say this is... is this a hard life? Is it difficult?
Yes, ma'am.
It is.
Yeah.
And tell me what's the most difficult thing about it.
Difficult work, tell us that mother work aegi, maja family illa he karega.
Means he has a problem at that he cannot manage his salary enough for four people.
Yeah. This was an arranged marriage, right?
Yeah.
It was an arranged marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did it turn into a love marriage?
After 1 year, I love it.
After 1 year, you love it. Is he a good partner?
Yeah, very good partner.
Good partner.
Yes.
Do you have a good life with him?
Yeah, very nice life.
I recently renovated this 100 square foot building into a cozy tiny home, and in this video I'll show you around and break down the cost along the way. So, let's get started. You enter the property from the side because the building is located in my garden, detached from the main house here in the east of England. I've lived in the house for 4 years, but it's currently undergoing some major renovations, so the tiny house gives me somewhere to live in the meantime. When the house is finished, I'll be renting it out, so this tiny space will serve as storage for my stuff, as I'll be moving away for a while. The extra tall fence can make the space feel darker, but will provide privacy to the tenants if ever I need to come and collect something. Now, you enter the tiny home via this lobby, which feels surprisingly spacious thanks to the wall-to-wall floor mat. When paired with these wall-hung shoe storage boxes, it really helps to maximize the space, and if they are any deeper, I'll be walking into them all the time. With the coat and key racks finishing off this space, and the total cost of everything in this room, from the floor mat, the shoe storage, and the coat rack, was just £121. Not a bad start for this budget build, which I gave myself around £8,500 for. Now, as we take the long walk into the bathroom, it's worth mentioning that there was no running water in this building at all when the renovation started, so that was a significant extra cost. Now, of course, this is a small bathroom, but the shower feels incredibly spacious, and this wall was actually moved back in order to achieve this, which allows for a much more relaxing shower for someone as tall as me, and much more legroom when using the loo. The cost of this room was just over £1,100 in materials and £4,000 in labour, for a total of £5,124, which is where the majority of the budget for this entire renovation went. But you may have noticed there's no sink, which means washing your hands in the kitchen. A small space calls for a small kitchen, and that's exactly what I've done here. But despite that, there's still plenty of room to store, prep, and cook food at home. There's no oven in here, but I rarely use one anyway, and this 4-burner cooktop is more than enough to cook all of my meals, and the microwave is great for reheating any leftovers. The angled extractor fan is compact, which allows me to see what I'm cooking, whilst the smaller fridge allows room on top and down the sides to store more things. Now, I think upgrading this toaster to an air fryer would be a huge upgrade for this kitchen, but I want to know what you think, so let me know in the comments below what you think would be the biggest upgrade to this kitchen. Oh, and I almost forgot to mention that these two walls are magnetic whiteboards, which I use all the time to make notes, plan my days, and make lists of things I need to do. To heat the space, I use this electric radiator, because I didn't want to run any gas lines into the property, as that would have massively increased cost. As for keeping it cool, I just have to open the window and the door, and the place will cool down within minutes. The cost of this kitchen is a little more complicated, because I had to work up in Splashback already from a different project. I also got a few things from Facebook Marketplace to help keep the cost down, such as the cooktop, extractor fan, and even the tap. In total though, it cost me just under £1,300, and if you added a little bit more for the bits I got for free, you could look to spend around £1,700 in order to achieve a similar look. Finishing off the kitchen, I have this floor-to-ceiling cupboard, which stores the majority of my possessions. Paring down from a 3-bed house to a 7-shelf cupboard did take some time, but it was something I was going to need to do anyway before the end of the year when I move away. And now we get to where I spend most of my days, the office. I wanted this area to feel more luxurious and professional, as I knew I'd be spending the majority of my time here, as a software engineer during the day and a wannabe YouTuber at night. So that's why I chose to make the desk out of a piece of solid oak from an old dining table which I found on Facebook Marketplace, which, when combined with the sit-stand desk frame, gives a lot of flexibility when working. The dual monitors are mounted to this stand, which looks much cleaner than just keeping them both on the desk, and more importantly, it provides a lot more space for everything else. This space will be getting even cleaner soon too, as this PC has just been replaced by my new personal laptop, which is a significant upgrade over my 12-year-old PC. And the reason I could afford this upgrade is because of you. By watching my previous video and subscribing, I managed to unlock monetization, and with that first video payslip, I upgraded my setup in order to make better videos. So if you have enjoyed this video so far, please consider subscribing, pressing the bell icon, and why not like the video while you're down there too. It's really helping the channel a lot in these early days. Thank you. As for the cost of everything in this office, I spent just £301. Now, I know what a lot of you are thinking. Why did I use such a dark color in this tiny space? And look, I get it. This was the first space I ever designed myself from start to finish. And I learned a lot about interior design along the way. However, even after living in here for 6 months, I still absolutely love this blue. It may not be for everybody, but for me, it works. And it's never made the space feel claustrophobic at all. If I'm not out and about, this is where I spend most of my evenings. And whilst I don't use the sofa in this mode too much, when it's set up as a recliner, it becomes a perfect hangout space for relaxing, playing games, and watching TV. Speaking of, I have this 49-inch LG TV mounted to the wall, which may seem like it's at a terrible viewing angle, but it is actually on this extendable mount, so the entire TV pulls out and rotates 90 degrees, so that you can see it while sitting on the sofa. In fact, you can rotate this TV any way you like. You can watch TV whilst cooking, washing up, or even on the toilet. The wall-mounted PS4 behind the TV ensured that minimal space was used, whilst allowing me to be always just a click of a button away from jumping into some games. To transform this space into a bedroom, I simply have to pull out the sofa, set up the legs, and lay the back on the floor. This gives me about a small double bed in total. I fit. Right? So how much did this all cost? Well, I came into this with a budget of £8,500, and looking back at the kitchen, bathroom, and everything else we've seen so far, they all came to a total of just under £6,700. And when you add in the near £1,200 for the living room section, the total so far comes to £7,870. And that leaves just the miscellaneous section, which includes things like the fencing, electrics, and anything else that didn't naturally fit into any of the other categories. And in total, that came to just under £2,400, leading to a grand total of £10,241. I'll admit it's a little bit over budget, but by doing the work myself, I help keep that cost from getting even more out of control. So that leaves one more question. Was it worth it? Well, I've actually lived here now for 6 months, and I'm really enjoying being in this space. But besides being just somewhere for me to live whilst the house gets renovated, I actually had the whole house evaluated before and after I did this renovation, and the number surprised me. For what cost me £10,000 to renovate, it added £30,000 of value to the house, which was far more than I ever expected. I thought maybe I'd get the money that I invested into it back, but to see that it tripled my investment blew my mind. There are some links in the description below to a lot of the products you've seen throughout this video, and if you want to actually see me transform this space from start to finish, then click right here or here to see that video, because not everything went to plan. And with that, please consider liking the video, subscribing to the channel if you're new around here, and I will see you next time.
Well, you're about to discover, maybe for the first time in your life, that wealth is not money, and money's not wealth. Real estate's not wealth either. Neither is gold or silver. What is wealth? I believe that wealth is one thing. Wealth is the value that you create for someone other than you. That's what wealth is. Wealth is the value that you create for someone other than you. And so the more we develop our ability to create value for other people, the more wealthy we are. And the reason I say money's not wealth, think about it like this. If you were stuck on a desert island and you had hundreds of millions of dollars in cash, what would it be worth? Nothing. Right? If you're stranded there, nobody knows you're there, nobody can find you, all that money doesn't do you any good. If you're there with another person, and they have food, and you have water, and they have no water, and you have no food, then your water becomes your wealth because you can trade them some of your water for some of your food. Are y'all tracking? And so everything that we desire, we get by giving somebody else something they desire. The more value we create for other people, the more wealth we have. It's just that simple. Now, money is one of the stores of value. That's what money is. Money is a store of value, and it's also a way to transfer value. It's also a way to represent value that you've already created, right? So if you think about money as like a certification, right? Like it's a certificate that proves that you've created value for someone other than yourself, right? And so, like, if you go to Eddie V's and you're a nice person, right, and you say, well, I would like for y'all to serve me some food, they are going to say, okay, we'll serve you some food, but at the end, they expect you to produce proof that you serve somebody other than you, and that proof shows up in the way of money, right? Because that's all money does. Money shows people that you deserve to have somebody create value for you because you can prove you created value for someone else, right? And here's what's really cool. All of us are good at different things. So we all have different value that we can create for other people. And if we keep the value that we create to ourselves, it doesn't really do us that much good. But if we spread the value, the value that we create for other people, if we spread that around, then it becomes more valuable. Now here's what's really interesting. I can't create value for someone until I know what's valuable to that someone. So wealth creation has like a lot to do with discovery, like discovering what other people value. And if I'm going to know what other people value, then I got to know where do those values come from? Like, where do values come from? There are things you value that I don't value. There are things I value that you don't value, right? And there are things that we both value, but you might value more than me or I might value more than you. Huh. So where do our values come from? Okay, I believe the first place that values come from is past, perceived, I'm just going to do PERC, perceived voids create present pursued values. Are y'all tracking? Past perceived voids create present pursued values. What does that mean? That means if I feel like something was missing in the past, I will work in the present to fill the void I had in the past, right? So that's why if people grow up in a place where they're in like dire hunger conditions or feast or famine, they value food like at a very high level, right? That's why people who, so for me, like I like cars. I like them. I like cars. I grew up working on cars, right? But I grew up in a family where when I was growing up, my parents never bought a new car ever. They had seven boys. Here's what boys do. They eat you out of house and home, right? Boys can just, it's like they're a bottomless food pit, right? And I can remember, like, if I was in elementary school, if I was going to eat a sandwich, I wouldn't eat a sandwich. I'd eat two, three, or four sandwiches, right? But I like cars. And so we grew up with buying $50 cars, $100 cars, and then working on them and driving them until they broke down. Then we go buy another $50 car, $100 car, and we had no car payments, right? So I like cars. I used to see people with nice cars. I'm like, why do they have nice cars? We don't have nice cars, right? So that's a past perceived void in my life, right? So it became a present pursued value. Some people like, why do you have all these expensive cars? Well, expensive is a relative term anyway. I don't even, like, that's really relative. Like, it depends on, like, what is expensive to you, right? So, but the reason I, like, have a collection of, I say a collection, I've got some very nice cars is because I like cars, because that was, for me, a past perceived void. I work out. Why do I work out? Because in the past, I've been out of shape. And in the past, my body hurt. The more out of shape I was, the more my body hurt. So that's a past perceived void that created a present pursued value. Are y'all tracking? And so a lot of times we don't even know where these things that we value came from, right? I value entrepreneurship. Why? Because in the past I used to have jobs, and they always came with a boss. And I don't know. The word boss means, like, they're going to be bossing me around. That's what, like, they're going to tell me, like, can I go? No. And I can't even finish the question, right? Can I have? No. And I don't like to have to ask for permission. I don't like permission. In fact, the best way to get me to do something is to tell me I can't do it. I'm that dude, okay? I know none of you entrepreneurs are that way, right? So you started business because you love people telling you what to do. Okay, judgment-free zone. And so I like autonomy. My parents, great parents, they weren't perfect parents by any stretch of imagination, which is why I did not become a perfect parent. Okay, so but they were great parents for me and my brothers, right? And they were very authoritarian. Like it didn't matter if I was 7 or 17. Why? The answer was always going to be the same, because I said so. Right? So I liked autonomy. So when I wasn't at home, I didn't like teachers telling me what to do at school. I didn't like my parents telling me what to do at home. And then I got a job, and the boss wanted to tell me, and everybody wanted to tell me what to do. And I know it's my own little weirdness going on in my mind palace, but like, you got yours, I got mine, and I don't like people telling me what to do. So I want to live as autonomous. Now, I want God to tell me what to do, but I don't like humans bossing me around, okay, because their motive is suspect. God's motive is not suspect, right? Right? And that's why I don't like it when people on my team call me, oh, this is my boss. I'm not your boss. I don't even like the word boss. I don't have an outfit that matches a boss. You don't have an outfit that matches a boss. So unless we're talking about business optimization success secrets from Boss Moves, then again, that's a different story. But not bossing people around. Anyway, so y'all get it. Past perceived voids create present pursued values. But also, the second place values come from, is present, pursued. I don't think I spelled that right. Pursued victories create present pursued values. So present pursued victories, the things I'm working towards winning right now, will cause me to value that thing, and so I've got a value. I want to win. So because I want to win, okay, for instance, I'm going to put my son-in-law on blast. So my son-in-law, I mean, we're really, really close until we get on the golf course, and then we try to beat each other's brains out. It's great. Okay? So he wants to beat me really, really bad. I want to beat him really, really bad. And for a while, I just beat him all the time. And then, like, I lost my mojo, and then he beat me all the time, and he was sending his mom text messages like, there's a new sheriff in town, and then his mom would call me, and I'm like, is this really happening? Okay, cool. So I started working on my short game again, and so now it's like the last three tournaments we've had, we play three-round tournaments, and we have this trophy, and every time you win three rounds, you get to put your name on the trophy. No, it's not on the news, it's not on ESPN, nobody knows but us, but we relish this victory so much, right? And so what we do, because we both want to win, is we both spend time working on our game, because present pursued victories create present values. So the things that we felt like we're missing in the past, that creates value for us. The things that we're working on winning in the present, and then the last one, is future pursued, I think I spelled that right, I don't know. Pursued visions create present perceived values. So what does that mean? That means I can see an outcome down the road that is worth sacrificing right now for, so I'll sacrifice the short term on the altar of the long term. I'll sacrifice, like, my pleasure right now because I've got this vision down the road. And I'll take some time off of playing golf. And I'll take some time off of practicing my guitar. I'll take some time off from something I want to do for me. Like, okay, give you a for instance. I am a foodie. If I wanted to, I could easily weigh 400, 500, 600 pounds. It would be easy. Like, I like food. You say, what kind of food? Almost all kinds. I mean, I don't like pork, and I don't like shrimp, and I don't like yucky stuff. It's disgusting. But I like to eat. And the better it is, the more of it I like to eat. I'm just keeping it real. Like, brother man can throw it down. I can fling it down. Hear me when I tell you. I mean, where are my foodies? Where are my foodies? Okay? But because I have this future vision, right? Like, I've got this future vision. I've got a granddaughter. She's 3. One of the highlights of my life, my entire existence on this planet as a human, was when I got to dance with my daughter at her wedding. That was a highlight for me. Okay? So, one of my future visions that I have is to dance with my granddaughter, not at her wedding. My 3-year-old granddaughter. She's not going to get married at 3. That's not what I mean. Like, my granddaughter who is 3, when she becomes an adult, one of my objectives is to dance with her at her wedding. Well, let's say she gets married when she's 21, like my daughter did. Okay? She'll be 4 in July, so that gives me 17 more years. Well, in 17 years, I'll be, oh, snap. I'll be 79, right? You know what that tells me? That tells me as much as I love food, and I do love it, I don't like it, y'all. Hear me when I tell you. If I'm going to eat something, I want it to taste. I don't even want to waste any time eating food that don't taste good. Okay, y'all tracking. Like, I'm the guy who, when I make spaghetti, I season the water I boil my noodles in. I'm that dude. Okay, how many of y'all tracking? Okay, now y'all know who y'all dealing with. Okay, So, just keeping it real. Okay, so, but because I want to dance with my granddaughter at her wedding, when she gets married, I don't eat food until 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And I drink water in the morning, and I have a window to eat between 1 p.m. and 9 p.m. It opens at 1 with a protein shake, then I'll eat some snacks, in between, like some carrot chips or some celery or something good with some different whatever dip I decide. I'll mix some honey mustard and some ranch, and I know that's not healthy. I don't really care. This is my vision, y'all. You do you. I'm going to do me. Okay, I know that's not the healthiest thing in the world, but it's what I do right now. So if y'all want me to do better, pray for me. Okay, so. And then I'll eat dinner. So but I'm going to make sure my protein shake is really, really good, and I'm going to make sure my snacks are really, really good, and I'm going to make sure when I eat dinner, oh, look at him, is really, really good. Okay, so what am I telling you? I'm telling you my value comes from something that I desire that's way in the future, that I'm willing to sacrifice right now on, right? It's too many people, they don't understand that today is yesterday's tomorrow. And they act as if the actions they take today have no consequences in the future, right? And so the definition of sacrifice is to let go of something of a lower nature so you can take a hold of something of a higher nature. And the best way for us to live our lives, it's like it's been proven, it doesn't matter whether it's in finances, whether it's in health, whether it's in relationships, it doesn't matter what arena we're talking about, sacrificing the short term on the altar of the long term always ends better than sacrificing the long term on the altar of short term. It always does. It's just like a principle of life. Okay, so now I know when I'm looking at my particular marketplace in whatever particular niche I'm looking at, then I know what I have to do if I want to create wealth is I have to figure out how to help somebody fill their past perceived voids or how to win their present pursued victories, or how to fulfill their future pursued visions. How many of y'all tracking? Okay? So now when I'm looking at somebody, I know what kind of value, how to discover what you value. Because you're going to value one of those 3 things. Whatever you're working on in your life is probably going to fit into one of those 3 categories. Now, wealth is the result of value creation. The better your ability to create value for someone other than yourself, the wealthier you are. And sometimes that'll show up as money. Sometimes it'll show up as real estate. Sometimes it'll show up as like hard assets like gold and silver. Or it'll show up as digital assets like Bitcoin and Ethereum. But at the end of the day, whatever you pay for with money that you earned by creating value for someone other than yourself. So the very act of entrepreneurship, by its very nature, has to be self-sacrificing if you're going to win as an entrepreneur. How many of y'all got it? Wave at me. Say, I got it. Wave at me. Okay, good. Cool. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at what God set up in Genesis chapter 1. And I call it the four levels of value. So, because here's what y'all, like, here's one of the things I think we don't understand sometimes. All value is not created equally, right? What does that mean? All value is not created equally. So I can say, wow, but I created this value. Yeah, but the problem is either you valued it or maybe one other person valued it. You wonder why. Like, if you're not doing well financially, I'm going to tell you why. Because the pool of people that you've decided to create value for is very small. Or the thing that you, the value that you've created for them, they value it at a very low level. Like, it's not like a big deal, right? I'm going to pay more for a car than I am for a pair of shoes. Why? That's a bigger value. Why? It can take me farther faster than a pair of shoes, right? So watch this. So, like, even if I go to eat at Ocean Prime or I go to eat at Eddie V's and it costs $500 for dinner for, like, seven people or whatever, I value that more than I value the money, number one. But I also value it because it gives me the time that I want to spend or invest into the people that I care about the most, and I don't have to, like, I don't have to make the food, my wife doesn't have to make the food, my daughter doesn't have to make the food, my son-in-law, we can just sit down, we can go to dinner, we can pay somebody, they make all the stuff. Like, we don't have to go in the kitchen and do anything. We don't even have to open the refrigerator. It's amazing. They just keep bringing it to you. And then you don't have to clean off the table. I mean, if you don't want to, you don't even have to put your own pepper on your food. They'll put the pepper on for you. This is amazing. And then, when you get done, you don't have to clean the table up. You don't have to wash any dishes. You just leave. What? Sign me up right now. How many y'all checking? Like, so we have to get to the place in our lives where we realize that all value is not created equally, right? So while I'm giving you things that are not created equally, let me give you something that is created equally. Because all value is not created equally, all no's are created equally, but all yeses are not. What do I mean all no's are created equally? If you do a presentation to a potential client who does not have the wherewithal to buy your offer, and they say no, it feels the exact same as if you do a presentation to somebody who does have the wherewithal to buy your offer, and they say no. A no is 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 a no. Does that make sense? Okay. But if you talk to somebody who does not have the ability to take advantage of your offer, and you make an offer to that person, and they say yes, that's very different than when you talk to a person who has the desire to take advantage of your offer, and they say yes. They have the ability. One has the ability, one doesn't have the ability. Those are two very different yeses. All no's are created equally. All yeses are not. Why would you invest time talking to people who have neither the desire nor the willingness to buy your offer? That's why I don't do high-pressure sales. I'm just not interested in it. I don't need your money. I don't want your money. And if I got to drag you in, I'm going to have to drag you around. Like we would all do better if we would just realize there are already thousands, potentially tens of thousands, potentially hundreds of thousands of people, maybe even millions of people in the world who would love to purchase the value that we create if they only knew we existed. And if that were really the case, then I would be better off to spend my time to make myself findable than I am trying to find somebody to sell something to. Is what I'm saying making sense? Okay, so all value is not created equally. In Genesis chapter 1 and 2, God gave us the four levels of value. The lowest level of value is implementation. Implementation, oh, by the way, let me say this. Wealth is, it's like the value we create for other people, but here's what you have to understand about wealth. Wealth is a spiritual result. What do I mean wealth is a spiritual result? Well, let me ask you a question. Is it more spiritual for you to think about you or for you to think about someone else? Which one? Someone else. It's more spiritual for you to think about solving the problems of someone other than you. Okay? So wealth is a spiritual result. By the way, wealth is also a spiritual result because creativity is spiritual, right? And so if you're going to create value for somebody, that's also spiritual. So watch this. So the lowest level of value is implementation. What do I mean? This is like if you're on this level of value, if you're creating value for other people at the implementation level, you have limited. Who is limited? Everybody tap yourself on the chest, say I have. You've limited your ability to earn. Why? Because you're only going to make somewhere between minimum wage and about $80,000 a year. Well, that sounds kind of painful. Why? Because you're using muscles, which are a physical resource, over time, which is a limited resource. So you're literally using a physical resource over a limited resource to produce an unlimited spiritual result. No wonder you're stuck. This is why I tell people, now, if you just love like mowing grass, you want to start a lawn care company, that's fine. If you just love pressure washing, you want to start a pressure washing business, that's fine. You can make money and create a limited level of wealth with a pressure washing business. You can. Or a landscape business or a janitorial service. But here's the problem. You're anchoring your income generation to time and physical labor. That is always going to pay you at the lowest possible level. Why? Because muscles are a physical resource. Time is a limited resource. Wealth is an unlimited spiritual result. Okay, what's the next level? The next level is unification. Unification, on this level, you're going to make somewhere between $40,000 a year and maybe, if you're like at a Fortune 500, Fortune 100 company, you might make $250,000 a year. Well, that, how many of y'all know $40,000 to $250,000 is better than minimum wage to $80,000, right? That's a better window. But, I mean, do you really, and maybe you do, but do you really want a whole year to go by and you only make $250,000? I mean, that's a question we have to answer for ourselves. And for some people, the answer is like, man, if I had a year went by, I made $250,000, that's more than $20,000 a month. Sign me up right now. Okay, great. Sign you up right now, but probably not sign you up forever, right? Can I get a witness, right? Like, it's not a bad place to start, but it's not where we want to land, okay? What is this? This unification on this level, the resource we use on this level is our management skills. Managing people is a higher spiritual activity than doing the thing yourself. Are y'all tracking? That's why when people get into management, they make more. This person over here, they're making tacos at Taco Bell. They're making minimum wage. This person might be a mechanic working at a Rolls-Royce dealership or maybe a Mercedes dealership or BMW dealership. This person right here is managing Taco Bell. This person right here is a middle manager at Lockheed Martin. But the reality is if some company is paying you $250,000 a year, they want you to know they own you. Am I telling the truth? They want you to know. They don't just want you to know they own you. They want you to know they know it. Right? And so like, if that's what you desire, that's fine. But maybe there's a way to have a level of freedom beyond that. And I believe that wealth begins to be created above this line. Wealth begins on the level of communication. Communication, on the level of communication. Now, somebody said the quality of your life will be equal to the quality of your communication. Okay, so communication, the resource you use on this level is your mouth. Now, there's a caveat. You have to have a mouth. You have to be willing to learn to use it. To do what? Create messages that move the masses. It's amazing that this, all of this, is harder than this. But to become a person who's skilled at this is harder than just doing this. What do I mean? Some people will maintain a state of physical diligence so they don't have to develop a level of verbal diligence and verbal intelligence and verbal acuity, right? I don't want to have to learn how to talk, so I'm just going to go ahead and keep on working my fingers to the bone. Well, that's one way to do it, right? Okay. Well, so communication. On this level, low end, you should make at least $100,000 a year. If you can sell cars, you can make $100,000 a year. Selling cars. Selling insurance. Right? Selling advertising. $100,000 a year. But on the high end, you might make $100 million. Why? Because you're using your mouth to deliver value. Well, Myron, what do you mean $100,000? Like, you know who these people are? These people are salespeople, right? They're also authors. They write books. Like, we got, our books probably make us $400,000 a year. Just books. I wrote them once. Just get paid for them every day. What is it? It's a message communicated. It's like these words that came to my mind, and they actually came out of my mouth. Like, I communicated a message that makes me hundreds of... I communicated messages. One of the books I wrote in 2006. This is 2023. That's 17 years. This book has been making me money for 17 years. We sold over 155,000, 160,000 copies of this one book. Now, who could write a book? Anybody could. Who will write a book? Almost no one. Okay, so... These people are coaches and teachers and actors and songwriters and playwrights, right? Please don't let me forget this one, and YouTubers. It's crazy town. YouTube. Don't even get me started on YouTube, y'all. I might not be able to get off of it. Like, YouTube? I had no idea. I've been on YouTube since 2007. I didn't even know there was a thing called turning on monetization until 2022. How many years is that? 15. I think it's 15. Ain't that 15? 15 years. I was on YouTube for 15 years. I didn't know all I had to do was click a button. They start paying me. Click a button. Like, this is how long it takes to click a button. Click. Get paid. I mean, I wasn't creating new videos. I had like 40 videos on. We turned on monetization. Did no new videos. The first month. Didn't do any new videos. Hadn't done any new videos in like 8 months. Turned on monetization. And we got paid $305. And Zach's like, we get made $305 last month. And I said, for what? Because somewhere along the line, I communicated a message somebody wanted to see, and Google or YouTube was able to sell an ad on that. We're talking about 200. This is amazing. I looked at it yesterday. I didn't know this was going to happen, so I didn't do it for this reason. Are y'all tracking? What I'm about to tell you, I did not do for the reason I'm about to tell you what happened, okay? So we started doing YouTube videos intentionally April 1st last year. I looked at it yesterday. In the last 365 days, as of yesterday, we made $289,000 that YouTube paid us. I didn't know they were going to do that. No, you don't understand. I had no idea they were going to do that. Like, that wasn't why I did it. I mean, it was a nice side benefit, right? I've never had a job where I made $280,000 in my life. Most I've ever made at a job is $30,000, ever, as a full-grown man with a family. And YouTube paid me $289,000 for turning on a camera and running my mouth. Where the camera? Turn on the camera. I got something to say. The highest level of value is imagination. It still blows my mind. The resource you use at this level is your mind and your money to make money, to create value for other people. And what happens is at this level, on the low end, you're going to make $1 million. On the high end, it could be billions. And I know that sounds crazy. There's one YouTuber. This dude has 150 million subscribers. He gets over 100 million views a month. 100 million views. If he only makes $2 a view, that's 200 million a month. Are y'all tracking? It's just the whole world that we live in is kind of insanical. It's kind of the combination of insane and maniacal put together. This, so we can fight to stay down here, and people will do it too, because this, everything you do down here is hard. But I don't know if anything's harder than thinking. Thinking is the hardest work most people never do. In fact, I believe that most people will maintain a state of physical diligence so they can maintain a state of mental laziness. They will work hard at what's not working so they don't have to think about what would work. Most people will work hard at what's not working, so they won't have to think about what would work. They will maintain a state of physical diligence, like working their fingers to the bone, sweat, blood, tears, so they don't have to think about what would work. So they can maintain a state of mental laziness. Most people are so mentally lazy, it's pathetic. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Myron, I don't know what Bible you've been reading. I did not see that in chapter 1. Okay, I'm going to read it to you. It's kind of mind-blowing. So a couple things. One is that Genesis chapter 1, I believe, if all God wanted us to know from Genesis chapter 1 was that he created everything, Genesis chapter 1 could have been Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Then he starts going into all this detail. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters, and God said, let there be light. And there was light, and God saw the light, that it was good. Like, what is all that about? Well, the first thing God tells about God is not that he is love, even though he's love. It's not that he's holy, even though he's holy. The first thing that God tells about God is not that he's omniscient or omnipresent or omnipotent, even though he is all those things. The first thing God tells about God is that he's creative. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. What's the first thing God tells about us? The first thing he tells about us is that he created us in his image, which means he created us to create stuff and he made us to make stuff. What does that mean? What that means is when God created everything, after he created everything, Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. After he did it, then he went back and documented the process, so when we got ready to create value for someone else, we'd have a pattern. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. That was his intention. And the earth was without form. That word was not, used to be, it became, without form and void. So disruption always follows intention. And darkness upon the face of the deep. So when disruption comes, it comes in the form of devoidness, deformity, and darkness. Like things get broken. There's confusion. Darkness is a picture of confusion and fear and anxiety. And then the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the water. So you have this intention, and then disruption follows your intention. So now you've got to find a source of inspiration. The Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. God said, let there be light. That's illumination. You've got to learn something you didn't know so you can see something you couldn't see. Do you see what happens when I just happened to do this. No. He's showing us what to do. And then he took time to see what he had created, and then he recognized that it was good. See, some of us, like, we'll go do all this really great stuff, and then we won't even take time to enjoy what we've created. You're not even being like God. Okay, y'all tracking. So it gets more better. So here it is, Genesis chapter 1. I'm going to show y'all where I got this from. Genesis chapter numero uno. Here we go. Here's what it says. When God created man, I'm going to just go down to that part. Here's what it says, verse 26. And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that moveth upon the earth. So God created man in his own image, and the image of God created him, male and female created he them. So, and God blessed them and said unto them, be fruitful and multiply, replenish the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. Okay, so here's the first thing we see. And God said, it's really interesting. So if you go back and read Genesis chapter 1, what you'll see it says, and God said, like at Genesis 1, I think it's verse 3, and God said, let there be light. Maybe it's verse 4. And God said, let there be light, right? Okay, when God created creation, he said, let there be. Let there be light. Let there be a firmament that separates the waters from the waters. So when God created creation, there's three categories. There's creation, There's creatures and there's creators. When God created creation, he said, let there be. When God created creatures, he said, let the earth bring forth and let the waters bring forth. Let the earth bring forth the cattle and the creeping things. Let the water bring forth the fish and the fowl. What is God doing? He's delegating some of the work that he did to something that he's already created. So we could call that delegation. We could call that automation. Right? Are y'all tracking? So that you're not doing everything. Okay, so y'all tracking. Okay, now, but when he created man, he didn't say, let there be man. That shows us that man is not a higher form of animal. He didn't say, let the earth bring forth man. He didn't say, let the waters bring forth man. So we know that man is very, very different than creation, and he's very, very different than creatures. How do we know that? Because what God said when he created them was different. When he created creation, he said, let there be. When he created creatures, he said, let the waters bring forth, let the earth bring forth. When he created man, here's what he said, let us. Let us make man in our image. What's he saying? I'm about to do something different, y'all, than everything I've already done. I saved the best for last. It's about to be on, y'all. Okay, now, God said, let us make man in our image. You know what that means? Before God could say, let us make man in our image, the image had to exist first. That's why imagination is the highest level, because it represents God. It's the God realm. God said, there's the communication. By the way, could God have made man in his image without saying it? Yes, he could have. But he said it. Why? Because that's part of our creative power, is to create messages that move us and messages that move others. Here's what the scripture says. A man shall eat good by the fruit of his mouth. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and they that love it shall eat the fruit thereof. Thou shalt also declare a thing, and it shall be established where? Unto thee. I'm not talking about speaking things into existence. You can't do that. I can't do that. Only God could do that. That's a bara. The only person in Scripture who barahs is God. But what I can do is I can talk to myself like David did when he did what? Encouraged himself in the Lord. How do you encourage yourself in the Lord? Say the same thing to yourself that God said to you about you. When I speak God's word to me, guess what I'm doing? I am installing faith into a space where doubt used to exist, so I can take an action in faith that I could not take in doubt. How many of y'all track it? Why? How do I know that? Because faith cometh by hearing, and hearing by what? The word of God. So the best thing I can do for me is to say the same thing about me that God says about me. Because when I see myself like he sees me, now I can do what he says I can do and not what other people say I can't do. Are y'all tracking? And this is where I got the four levels of value. Right? So when we're working at those highest levels, we're working in that imagination realm. Then we start communicating, we're working that communication realm. But God didn't say, let me make man in my image. What did he say? Let us make man in our image. That's the unification part. Two are better than one, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. Are y'all, this is so powerful for, the money is nothing more than proof that you've created the value. The wealth is the value that you create for someone other than yourself. And if you create enough value for enough other people, there's nothing in this world that you desire that you can't have. Now, and maybe that's not even what you want. There's nothing in this world that I desire that I don't already have. Somebody commented on one of my videos, somebody commented on one of my videos, they said, but you can't take it with you. And I can't take the lot I got with me. You can't take the little you got with you. We ain't taking none of it with us. That's first. But I said, I have neither the desire nor the inclination to take any of it with me. I'm not working to take it with me. I'm working so that I can keep contributing to the charities and the ministries that I contribute to, and so that I can leave the rest to my children, my children's children. I have no intention of taking it with me. I can send some ahead, and I can leave the rest here. I have no desire to take any with me. Myron, how much money do you want to make? As much as I can. How much wealth do you want to create? As much as I can. But wealth is not the money. Wealth is the value that I create for someone other than me. Okay, I gotta finish. The last thing it says, Genesis chapter 2, because I didn't realize Larry didn't tell me that I was getting ready to go over time, but that's okay. It's okay. Now I know who I'm dealing with. Okay. Larry's my dude. Okay, so here's what it says. Genesis chapter 2, verse 7. And the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground, breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living soul. I'm going to finish with this. God formed. What is that? That's the implementation. The last thing God did was made the physical part of man. Then what did he do? He breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. The man that he made in his imagination with his communication, patterned after his unification, he breathed that man into the body that he formed. And the man became a living soul. That's why I call these the four levels of value. Now y'all know where I got it from in Genesis chapter 1. By the way, it's confirmed in Genesis chapter 11. The people in Babel were trying to build a tower whose top could reach heaven. Do you know how ridiculous that sounds in a day where they don't have hydraulics, they don't have helicopters, they don't have cranes? But here's what it says. The Lord God came down to see the tower and the sun, the city and the tower which the sons of men builded. And he said, this people is one, that's unification. They all have one language, that's communication, and one speech. Now this they begin to do, that's implementation. Now nothing will be restrained from them, which they've imagined to do. There are the four levels of value. If you apply these four levels, even working on something that's not good, it will still work. That's how powerful it is, because it's a principle, and principles are God's automation. So let's make sure we apply the four levels of value to something good and not to something evil. I hope that blesses you. Thank you for subscribing. By the way, next Friday, which is the 9th, I think, of June, I am going to be doing a giveaway for subscribers. So you want to subscribe to my YouTube channel. If you haven't already, you want to subscribe to the channel, because we're going to be picking some subscribers. You want to subscribe publicly so people know, so we can pick from the people who subscribe, and we're going to pick somebody, and we're going to be doing a giveaway. I'm not going to tell you what the giveaway is right now, but I'll tell you on the Bible study here that's coming up in a few minutes. All right. Bye for now.
All right, today's podcast is titled The Asset Economy. I think this is turn your financial situation around and help somebody else turn theirs around. You need to grasp hold of this concept. Nothing new. But let me read what we have on our program notes here. First thing, let's get with a definition of an asset. An asset, and I'm reading from my program notes here right on Blog Talk Radio, an asset is a resource with economic value. And we can just put a period on that one, but let me read a little bit more. An asset is a resource with economic value that an individual, corporation, or country owns or controls with the expectation that it will provide a future benefit. Assets can also be created, or they can be bought, or they can be created. And I'm putting emphasis on created. To increase a firm's value or benefit from the firm's, or benefit the firm's operation, even on a personal finance level. An asset is something that may generate cash flow, reduce expenses, or improve sales, regardless of whether it is manufacturing equipment and or a patent, which is intellectual property in many cases. Assets can be classified as, distinctions, current assets, fixed assets, financial assets, and intangible assets. All right, now, within the Amish and Mennonite communities, I would call those asset-based communities. And the assets are mainly in the form of family-based businesses. So if you have a family business and everybody in that family is involved with the business, that's what I would call, my coin term, an asset-based family. The asset-based households And we have to look at this also. Asset-based households versus paycheck households. In the house that you're living in the home that you're living in, are you and yours working for paychecks exclusively, or are you working for assets? Are you working for paychecks, or were you working for assets? All right. For me, I'm working for assets. Now, you can earn a paycheck and take the proceeds of that paycheck and put towards assets. All right, let's see. Because we want to wrap up here soon. There is a book available in hardbound, or you can get an e-book of it or paperback, titled The Asset Economy. And let's see what we have here. Here we go. Let's go to the good old Wikipedia. The asset-based economy. The asset-based economy, Wikipedia explanation, I'm really not, well, I'm going to simplify it, or let me go to something else here. One definition here: when a debt-based economy is where someone is forced to work for a company in order to get their money back, whereas an asset-based economy is where somebody is able to use the company's perceived value in order to get money back or generate money. You know what? Let's just stick with our program notes here. An asset is a resource with economic value. It can be bought or created. I prefer to create it, like Toyota. Toyota makes 29.9 cars per minute. Those cars are assets. Those 29 cars per minute, those are assets of Toyota Motors. And, of course, they sell those cars to the public. So it can be a car. It can be a cupcake. It can be a tiny house. It can be any kind of widget that you can think of. If it has an economic value to someone other than yourself, it is an asset. All right. Any questions, any comments, 619-728-2945. And we're going to continue with this topic, Wednesday? We're going to continue on this topic. Yes, Wednesday. We're going to continue on this topic for this week and every week, for the balance of this week, but at least once a day each week, or a mention of it every day, because we want to get in the habit, and hopefully you'll join us, on building at least one asset per day. At least one. All right. So it's kind of quiet this morning here. So I am going to wrap it up for the day and get out here and do some errands. Matter of fact, I need to go buy some furring strips for an asset that I'm organizing. So on that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.